Good morning, all. I'm going to call this meeting of the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency's Advisory Planning Commission to order. It is Wednesday, May 12th, 2021. It's right at 9:30, and we're here in our virtual webinar once again. The first item on the agenda is to call the roll to determine our quorum. Tracy, could you do that for me, please?
Sure. Mr. Oling?
Present.
Mr. Booth?
Good morning.
Ms. Carr?
I am here. Good morning.
Ms. Chandler?
Present.
Mr. Drake? Mr. Drew? Mr. Ferry?
Here.
Ms. Ferris? Ms. Ferris, I do see you on, but you appear to be self-muted. Mr. Gavon?
Oh, she just unmuted, I see.
Oh, there you are. Ms. Ferris?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Hill?
Good morning.
Ms. Jacobson?
Here.
Mr. Letton?
Yes, good morning.
Mr. Hitchcock?
Good morning.
Ms. Stala?
Here.
Mr. Teixeira?
Morning.
Mr. Smokey? Mr. Young?
Good morning.
Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Tracy. And as you all may have heard, Ms. Ferris has joined us from Carson City to replace Lee Plemmel on the Advisory Planning Commission. So I'd like to formally welcome you, Ms. Ferris, to our committee. We're happy to have you participate.
Welcome. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. This is Jason Drew. Sorry, I was a little late. I'm here.
Good morning, Jason. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
And also, this is Kevin Drake. I joined in there about halfway through roll call.
Excellent. Thank you, Kevin. Got good participation this morning. Let's see. I also understand that Mr. Calicrate from Washoe County has resigned his post on the Advisory Planning Commission due to some life changes, it sounded like. So I think Tim will not be joining us any longer, and Washoe County will probably have to find a member at large replacement for Tim, but I don't have a timeline on that. So just a few member updates for everyone. Let me now move into the meeting rules for the day. Please bear with me here. To observe the meeting, go to trpa.gov. Under the calendar header, click on Advisory Planning Commission online meeting for May 12th, 2021. There you'll find a link to the public webinar hosted on GoToWebinar. To address APC members directly with your comments, please utilize the hand-raising function in the control panel of the GoToWebinar, which you should see under the red microphone. At the appropriate time for public comments, please raise your hand by clicking on the hand icon, and a TRPA staff member will unmute you to indicate that you can begin your public comment. Please state your name at the beginning of your public comment. If you requested a reasonable accommodation from TRPA and have been provided a unique PIN number for dial-in, you'll be unmuted at that time, and you can make your public comment then. If you are using the GoToWebinar's Instant Join web app, please make sure it's opened in the Google Chrome browser and that you allow access to your microphone in order to be unmuted. Finally, if you have called into the general attendee line with the access code posted on the website, please be aware that this is a listen-only option. To APC members, if you wish to speak, you can alert me via the chat function or speak up when someone else isn't speaking. APC members may only use the chat function to indicate a desire to speak. This function must not be used to have a sidebar conversation. Due to a limited amount of video feeds available, please keep your cameras turned off. And finally, everyone remember to mute your microphone unless you're speaking to cut down on background noise. Okay, let's move now to item 2, approval of the agenda. And staff, do we have any changes to the agenda?
Mr. Chairman, there are no changes to the agenda.
Thank you, John. We will deem the agenda approved as posted then for the record. And now on to item 3, public interest comments. If any member of the public wishes to address the Advisory Planning Commission, please use the hand-raising function now, and you'll be unmuted by a TRPA staff member. All public comments should be as brief and concise as possible so that all those who wish to participate may do so. The chair has the discretion to set appropriate time allotments for individual speakers. No extra time for participants will be permitted by the ceding of time to others. Written comments received prior to the meeting were forwarded to the APC members, and we did have one public comment submitted. Hopefully everyone was able to see that. In the interest of efficient meeting management, the chairperson reserves the right to limit the duration of each public comment period to a total of 1 hour. Any unheard comments can be submitted via email to tcampbell@trpa.gov and will be forwarded to all APC members. Please note the Advisory Planning Commission is prohibited by law from taking immediate action on or discussing issues raised by the public that are not listed on this agenda. So, Catherine, I'm going to turn this over to you to manage any muting or unmuting of members of the public with their hands raised.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one more time for members of the public. If you'd like to make a comment at this time, please click on the hand icon on the left-hand side of your control panel. And Mr. Chair, there are no hands raised to make a public comment.
Okay, thank you, Catherine. Let's move to item 4, disposition of minutes. We do have a set of minutes in our packet from April 14th, 2021. It's on page 7 of your packets. Are there any questions, comments from APC members on the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Steve.
Thank you, sir. So once again, outstanding work by Tracy on the minutes. I just have two minor corrections. They are both on page 16, and they are both under the section entitled Commission Comments and Questions. In the first paragraph, it says Ms. Roverud asked if the, and it should be word safe. And the second one is in the third paragraph, second line. It's just, again, a minor one. Instead of RPT, it should be RTP. Outstanding job by Tracy.
Absolutely. Tracy, were you able to get those edits?
I got them, yes. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Great. Any other members with comments on the minutes?
Hearing none, Mr. Chair, I'd make a motion to approve the minutes with the two corrections noted.
Thank you, Steve.
I'll second the motion. Jennifer.
Thank you, Jennifer. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any objections or abstentions?
This is Heather. I abstain.
Yep. Heather is abstaining.
Jason Drew, I abstain.
Jason Drew is abstaining.
John.
I will
Mr. Chair.
Abstain.
John Hitchcock's going to abstain. Okay.
Mr. Chair, Kevin Hill abstain.
Kevin Hill abstaining. And I will abstain also. I was not present at the last meeting. It sounded like a great one, though. Were you able to get all those, Tracy?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Kevin Hill. Also on the very first page where it mentions meeting members absent, I should be listed there as well.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Tracy, were you able to get all those abstentions?
I've got those, yes. Thank you.
Okay, good. Thank you all. Okay, let's move on to item 5, which is our public hearing for today. Item 5A is a conformity review for Washoe County's Tahoe Area Plan and corresponding modifications to chapters 34, 36, and 38 of the TRPA Code of Ordinances The TRPA staff report can be found on page 20 of your packet. And now I'm going to turn this over to Michael Conger to present.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the Commission. My name is Michael Conger, representing TRPA Long Range Planning staff. I'm joined today by one of your fellow commissioners, Eric Young, who's a senior planner with Washoe County Planning. Eric is here this morning to present Washoe County's proposed Tahoe Area Plan, which was recently adopted by the Board of County Commissioners. Before he begins, though, I wanted to provide a little bit of an introduction. Area plans as a planning document were first introduced to TRPA as part of the 2012 Regional Plan update. They were envisioned as a way to harmonize the regional plan with each jurisdiction's master or general plan. Since 2012, TRPA has adopted 5 conforming area plans, and the Washoe County Tahoe Area Plan would be the 6th. Area plans are an important component of regional plan implementation. They bring regional plan concepts and strategies down to a local level, and they allow adaptation of regulations to fit the local context. Additionally, adoption of a conforming area plan unlocks several benefits, including development incentives for designated town centers and the ability for a local jurisdiction to assume additional permitting authority. Washoe County has completed their adoption of the area plan, and they've now submitted the Tahoe Area Plan to TRPA for conformance review. Before the governing board considers whether the area plan conforms to the regional plan, the Advisory Planning Commission is asked to make a recommendation to the governing board. To start out, I'd like to talk a little bit about the scope of the plan. The Washoe County Tahoe Area Plan is proposed to cover all of Washoe County's territory within the Tahoe Basin. This includes the communities of Incline Village and Crystal Bay, Nevada. The plan uses the same approach as Placer County's Tahoe Basin Area Plan in that it covers several town centers as well as residential and conservation areas. In terms of development standards and policy changes, the area plan largely consolidates and updates policies from the plan area statements and the community plans that it's replacing. The changes being made are targeted on a few topical areas, which Eric will discuss in further detail. This effort results in an area plan that aligns with the 2012 regional plan and focuses on new implementing actions that seek to put the updated policies into effect. As I mentioned, a major focus of the effort was updating and modernizing goals and policies. The area plan will also serve as a single planning document that replaces 23 plan area statements and 4 community plans. The boundaries and requirements for the various plan area statements and community plans are, however, being carried through as new Washoe County regulatory zones. Perhaps the most significant effect of the area plan is that it will unlock incentives for redevelopment of town centers. There are 3 regional plan designated town centers in Washoe County which would benefit from additional height, density, and coverage. We anticipate that these incentives will catalyze replacement of legacy development with well-designed buildings and pedestrian-friendly site planning that also incorporates water quality improvements. Based on feedback we received from the Regional Plan Implementation Committee, the plan is being developed to align with other applicable local and regional plans, such as the Long Range Transit Plan and the State Route 28 Corridor Plan. Finally, the Washoe County Tahoe Area Plan would eliminate a longstanding conflict between TRPA's local planning documents and Washoe County zoning. If adopted, both the county and TRPA will be operating off of the same planning document rather than having 2 separate and often conflicting sets of land use requirements. Washoe County staff worked closely with TRPA staff in drafting the area plan. In October 2019, the public review draft was presented to the Regional Plan Implementation Committee. Feedback was then incorporated into the public hearing draft, which went through the county's hearing process. The Board of County Commissioners completed their review and adopted the plan along with corresponding zoning and development code changes on January 26, 2021. TRPA staff has had the opportunity to review the area plan for conformance with the standards in Chapter 13 of the TRPA Code of Ordinances. And we've concluded that the plan, as adopted by the county, conforms to the regional plan and code of ordinance standards. A checklist documenting our review is attached to the staff report. TRPA staff also reviewed the plan to ensure that threshold indicators and compliance measures would not be negatively affected by the plan's adoption. In addition, the county worked with an environmental consultant to prepare an initial environmental checklist. That checklist, which relies on analysis in the regional plan's environmental impact statement, concludes that adoption of the plan will result in no significant effect on the environment. Finally, the Regional Plan Implementation Committee reviewed the plan at their April meeting. At that time, they unanimously recommended approval. Based on this, TRPA staff recommends that the Advisory Planning Commission recommend governing board adoption of the findings, adoption of the area plan itself, and adoption of related code of ordinance amendments to chapters 34, 36, and 38 to incorporate references to the area plan's design standards. And with that, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Eric Young, who will discuss the area plan in further detail.
Thank you so much, Michael. And thank you for having such a full house today. I don't know if that's a coincidence or if everybody's just super interested in the Tahoe area plan, but I really welcome a full house at the APC today. As you can imagine, I've seen Michael give several of these presentations before as a member of the APC, and I have to say that this is actually the best one I've ever seen in terms of just the importance of everything he said. So Michael has really laid out our concept, where we were coming from, some of the major things we really needed to accomplish and did accomplish. So his presentation is really more than an introduction. He really pointed out some of the more important things that we accomplished. So I'm going to go over just in a little bit more detail what it meant to us. Next slide, please. So we did get caught up in COVID with this plan. I think we were within one meeting, I believe, of finalizing the plan in early 2020. In fact, we had to do two meetings at the Board of County Commissioners for our ordinance, a first reading and then an adoption. We got the first reading accomplished at the last meeting the County Commission held before they shut down. And they said that they wanted to hold off on this Tahoe area plan until they could have people attend an actual meeting. That was important to them to wait. We sent out almost 8,000 notices to every property owner in the basin, in the Washoe County part of the basin, twice. And they felt that if they were going to do that, they didn't want to just move forward with a virtual adoption. And so we waited for a long time. And in the meantime, since they did wait that time and then come back in January of this year and adopt the plan, as you can imagine, when you wait that long, a little bit changes. So here's what's happened in the meantime. The plan hasn't changed, but Washoe County has adopted a short-term rental ordinance. It has been implemented. We're currently taking applications for permits. And part of that ordinance says that I believe it's November or December, the county is obligated to come back and review how the implementation is going, what it looks like, and make any adjustments if necessary. So we're pretty proud of that ordinance, and we're proud of the fact that we're committed to coming back and reviewing it in a few months. When this plan originally went before the Washoe County Planning Commission and the Washoe County Board, the short-term rentals were one of the more important things on the community's mind. But in the intervening time, the concept of mobility hubs became quite important. We made a point of adding them to our map to reflect our conformance with the transportation plan that shows two conceptual mobility hubs in our area. So we added those to the map, and the community noticed that and became very interested in, well, what is a mobility hub? What are you doing here? What is this all about? And so the TTD, thank you very much. They did a great job, stepped in and helped us communicate with the community exactly what a mobility hub is. They did 4 excellent webinars at different times, different dates to try and capture everybody. And I think they did a great job of communicating the concept of a mobility hub. And also in the meantime, we've looked at what the implementing measures of this plan are and decided that we don't really need to completely wait for this plan to be fully adopted before we start looking at some things we can do. And in particular, some housing needs studies and looking at some of the housing needs are something that we can do now. And we have indeed chosen to take part in a joint effort with some other agencies up there, including TRPA. Karen Fink is involved and helping us out to just do a housing needs study and find out how that lay of the land has changed. So next slide, please. Thank you. So here's where we began when we started all these years ago. We really were trying to achieve this one overarching goal that Michael just went over for you. And that is really trying to get to that foundation where we're all on the same page. Then throughout our process, we came across 5 other things that we really want to, well, there were a lot of changes we made, but there are 5 that we really want to highlight for you today. And then we think it's important today also for you to have a look at the permissible use changes. As Michael indicated, there aren't a whole lot of significant changes here. We're really trying to just put everything in order and reach a foundation point. But we did make a few permissible use changes. So we're going to go over those, and then I'll be ready for questions. So next slide, please. This one overarching goal was what we call creating a unified approach. We didn't realize all the jurisdictions up there had this issue. We thought we were the only ones, but I think you realize that a lot of jurisdictions in the basin have struggled to really get their codes, and meaning their terminology for zoning districts and master plan districts and even for permissible uses, to get all of that on the same page with TRPA's plan. And we really struggled for a long time. We even struggled to figure out what an area plan was and what it meant. We use a terminology called area plan. We've got 13 area plans in our master plan. We thought we knew what one was. And so we were talking past each other for a few years, actually. And then a couple of years ago, we sat down, and thanks to some really good communication skills by TRPA staff and a dedication by Washoe County staff to finally understand, we came to terms on what was required. And we understood that reaching this one goal of just coming together on the same page with each other was the most important thing we could do. And we feel we really did accomplish that with this plan. So next slide, please. So here's some other, a little bit more specific things. We did a lot of things, but these really jump out, partly because the APC has brought them up at other hearings for other area plans. The RPIC brought some of them up along the way. The community brought some of them up. So these are the ones that we'd like to highlight for you today. Of course, the town center environmental redevelopment concept within the regional plan is really the linchpin of the regional plan. Washoe County is fully on board with that concept. We feel like we've got a couple of important town centers that could really benefit from this concept. And so we are adopting all of the incentives available to us through the regional plan to help create some incentive and some movement behind the town center environmental redevelopment concept. We know that greenhouse gas reduction was not something on everybody's table in Nevada. I think California was a little bit ahead of us. Nevada has caught up in the meantime. But when the TRPA first started talking to us about greenhouse gas reduction, we really scratched our heads and said, what do you need us to do? But once again, we sat down and we figured it out, and we think that we have come up with a really innovative approach to greenhouse gas reduction that provides both an incentive-based approach and a code-based regulatory approach at the same time. And this is one of the things, among others, that's shown up in the Tahoe plan that we believe is going to make it down into the meadows, into the update of Washoe County's master plan in general. So we're kind of proud of this. Urban bare and urban forestry standards. We have to have the urban bare standards, and we were strongly encouraged to pursue the urban forestry standards as well. So in approaching the urban bare standards, we said, well, we have those. The GID up there approaches those, and we'll do a better job of advertising those. But we also want to expand the concept to urban wildlife. And so this is another thing that's going to make its way down into the meadows that started up here at the basin for us. Is we know we need to make not only urban bears, but urban wildlife something that we begin to talk about in our master plans and our planning documents. As far as urban forestry goes, this is not something that we currently have, like the urban bear standards, but we know we need to do it. But we want to take it seriously, and we didn't want to throw something together for this plan. So this is part of our implementation standards that we're going to pursue. We're waiting for some data to come out from around the lake, and we need to meet the right people and get networked with the right groups to be able to do this properly, but we are committed to doing it. Our natural hazard standards are something that is also going to make it down into the basin, or out of the basin and down into the meadows. It turns out we have standards for natural hazards, but they're not identified as such, and they're not located in any one spot. And it's hard to tell, depending on where you live, if you're subject to any of these special standards or not. So what we've done here is consolidate location-wise where you can find out with a map if you're subject to any special standards, development standards or planning standards, because you may be subject to any one of many different natural hazards, from wildfire to seismic and other, I think we've got a list of 5 or 6 natural hazards that could possibly occur right there in the basin. We've also taken a pretty big step on BNP compliance. The county has really made a strong effort to do local area projects, and we've done a lot of those, and we've got about as much benefit out of that as we can. And so what we've done here is to say another implementation standard is that we're going to team up with TRPA to develop a better specific parcel, specific owner-based BNP compliance standard and approach. I think that's the way Washoe County is going to be able to make the most gains in water quality compliance, is through the individual parcel compliance and not the area-wide projects like we've pretty much maxed out at there in our part of the basin. So those are the 5 things that we're excited about, specific things that we wanted to bring up for you today that we knew Michael wasn't going to talk about in his review. Next slide, please. We did have a few small but important allowable use changes. The Ponderosa Ranch is the most obvious one. It was time for the amusement park land use language to finally transition to represent what that area is already becoming and is to the community, a sort of a southern gateway to recreation opportunities coming and going into the community. And so we've taken out that language that turned it into an amusement park and tried to represent land uses that will really represent this southern gateway concept. The Fairway neighborhood, you may know that one as where the chateau is. They did not have the ability to do snowshoeing activities there in the winter as a permissible use. So we're changing that to a permissible use in order to make kind of what's been happening there organically allowed. We went through an environmental review and it found out we didn't really need to do any special mitigation to allow that to occur. The nursing and personal care and residential care permissible uses, this is kind of important. We expect to see this start to pop up more around the rest of the basin and even down in the meadows. This really has to do with senior care facilities and memory care facilities. And in the basin and other places, how they're treated in terms of density. And allowable densities for these are often not enough to make them work in terms of how the business plans for those types of uses work. We were able to get some data and some information from some developers of these uses, and we're able to make a case that they really operate more like a tourist accommodation unit than they do a multifamily unit. So we were able to get the densities for these particular uses increased in a couple of the town centers. And we feel this is going to be important because these uses, we're hearing more and more from the developers of these uses that there's a need for them and that our codes just don't quite accommodate them. So this was a cooperative move with DRPA staff and the developers and Washoe County staff to try and adjust how we approach these uses to make the memory care and the senior care facilities more viable in our communities. Another thing that we did that we want to bring up is the increased design standards for transmission receiving facilities, or what most people just refer to as cell towers. We're not really going to touch the tower itself. We're not sure where those technologies are going anyway, but we did feel we could do a significantly better job with the facilities that surround the cell tower, with the requirements for buffering, with the requirements for what that looks like from the ground as you're walking past it. And so we've increased those design standards. Like I said, not the tower itself, but the accommodating facilities that surround the tower on the ground. So those are the changes that we made, mostly in response to community input. Those are the things that I wanted to go over for you. I think I'll end this by saying that we're really happy to get to this point, to get to a point where we have a draft that we want to implement. But I really want to emphasize, and this even came up in the RPIC meeting, I'd like to emphasize that this is not an end for Washoe County. We don't see this as finally having gotten to an end point. We, from the very beginning when we started this, we realized what we needed to do was to get to a starting point. Because we were so off base, not only with TRPA, but just with history, we hadn't really touched our plan for a long time, that we really needed to get to a spot where we could all be on the same page, we could all be talking the same language, and we would consider that our starting point and not our end. And so that's how we feel about this. We feel like what we have accomplished is reaching the starting line, not reaching the end point. And that's important because, as you can imagine, there's a lot going on all around the basin. We talk about it all the time. And as we've waited for the adoption of this plan, as we move forward with the adoption of this plan, what's important to the community changes, issues come up and change, people become concerned with different things, and those issues come up. And we are committed to responding to those issues. We're not going to say that we've adopted this plan and we're done with it. We've adopted this plan so that we can all speak the same language, begin to implement it, and then, just like our STR ordinance, our short-term rental ordinance, come back whenever we need to and make the adjustments that the community and the other implementation measures we undertake tell us we need to make. So That's where I'd like to leave you. Thank you so much for indulging me today, and I'm open for questions.
Thank you very much, Michael and Eric, for the presentation, and especially to you, Eric, for taking us through, you know, your thought process and kind of a behind-the-curtain look at what Washoe County was thinking, what your goals were, and your motivations for getting this done. It was encouraging for me to hear just about your alignment with basin goals, TRPA, regional plan goals, et cetera. So that was great for me to hear. I want to turn this over to APC members for comments, questions for Michael or Eric. I don't see any in the chat, but why don't you go ahead and unmute yourself and speak up.
This is Kevin Drake. Eric, thanks for the presentation and overview. I'm excited to see some of this. I'm excited to see the plan get implemented. Could you describe in a little bit more detail how the redevelopment standards or environmental redevelopment standards will be updated for Washoe County? Obviously in line with TRPA regional plan, but could you explain kind of what that means in the context of Washoe County?
Sure. Well, the new TRPA regional plan provided a list of incentives that we could adopt. Increased height, which we adopted, from 3 to 4 stories inside the town centers. Increased coverage provisions. We adopted that incentive. You can, in our town centers, you can increase your coverage, was up to 70% now. And increased density as well. We've adopted the maximum density inside there as well. We're hoping that that will encourage. We've heard a lot of back chatter that people are waiting for the plan to be adopted because they actually do want to begin some redevelopment activities and are waiting for some incentives to kick in. And then together with our what we're calling our greenhouse gas standards, but really are more significant sustainable development standards. We're hoping that those combinations of incentives and standards will represent what TRPA is trying to accomplish with environmental redevelopment in the town center.
Thanks. So some pretty standard updates that are in line with the TRPA direction for the whole basin. They're sorely needed in the Incline Village in Washoe County area within the Tahoe Basin.
Yes. Thanks. And we're very interested to see. We're really, really curious to see if the back chatter is true and if people are really going to suddenly step up and help us implement these standards. It could even be this summer that people step up and start to do it. I don't know. Sometimes it's just rumors, but I'm hearing that people are waiting for our plan so that they can actually take advantage of increased density, increased coverage, that greenhouse gas standards in terms of a whole variety of different sustainable development standards are not scary anymore. People don't shy away from that like they used to. It's not something that turns people off. So we really have kind of high hopes. We'll see.
Good. Other members? Crystal, go ahead.
Thank you, Brendan. And thank you, Eric and Michael, for the presentation. It was great. I'm super excited to see Washoe County coming forward with an area plan. and liked what I saw in terms of kind of the interface on the state line with the county's plan. It looks like you took into consideration kind of the design standards and development standards that we had in our plan when you framed up yours. I had just a few comments and then a couple of questions. A few things that I liked what I saw in the plan. I liked the comprehensive parking management plan that was outlined as a policy, and would like to see what that looks like moving forward. I think, you know, I've mentioned before that we're kind of focusing on the same thing. We haven't really kicked ours off yet, but we intend to frame up a work program for the same kind of concept in our town centers moving forward. I also liked, I saw there was a policy, I think it was, or it might have been a development standard on plowing of snow on the multi-use trails. Really appreciate that concept. Also really, and I didn't focus on it too much, but I heard it in your presentation, the cell tower design standards. I think I'm going to kind of look and see what you did on that, because we're having some issues around that same use and wanting to kind of address our standards as it relates to cell towers. My questions had to do first with height, and you know, seeing that you're pulling your height up to 56 feet in the town centers, I'm just curious. I didn't see any kind of consideration for recognizing the existing height of like the Calneva and the Hyatt, I think it is, in the Incline Village area. And just wondering if I missed something, or if there's some sort of footnote or just statement, development standard statement, or something to the effect of allowance of those uses moving, you know, those uses being able to continue and move forward if they were to redevelop, for example. That was one question I had. And then the second one, I'm just curious if there was any consideration on the accessory dwelling standards, if there was any consideration for allowing them on lots smaller than an acre. It looks like they're only allowed on parcels of an acre or more, and just understanding that, you know, by design, accessory dwelling units really serve an affordable housing need, and just wondering if there was any consideration by your board, Eric, about, you know, allowing those on parcels less than an acre. So that's all I had.
Sure thing. Thank you. Michael, can you, I'm pretty sure I remember for you and I identifying where that language is on existing height, but I don't remember where we put it.
So there, we do have a standard in Chapter 38 of the TRPA Code of Ordinances that specifies a special height for areas on the north side of Highways 28 in the in the Nevada North State Line Community Plan area. So there is a special height standard that's built into TRPA code already, but it only applies on the mountain side of the highway, not on the lake side of the highway.
So what is?
I think we're kind of talking about the non-conforming status of higher properties being able to continue as they redevelop. I know we discussed something with Calneva. I don't remember exactly where we put that non-conforming language, or if we just assumed it.
Yeah, I'm not certain on that. I don't recall that conversation.
Okay. Regarding the 1 acre question for accessory dwellings, we absolutely considered it. We felt like we considered it a little too late because it requires a significant environmental review and in pretty significant community review as well. And so when I mentioned that one of the things we're doing is a housing study, that is going to be one of the questions involved in the housing study we're taking part in right now, is the use of accessory dwellings for housing. You know, we also just went through the adoption of a short-term rental ordinance, and mixing those two questions up at the same time when you're moving through adoption processes and having discussions with the community about STRs and accessory dwellings, it's very difficult to mix those two discussions up with the community. So we decided not to do that and to finish our the implementation of our short-term rental ordinance first. And then as part of this overall housing study, look at that question of loosening up the standards for accessory dwelling. I hope that answers your question on that. And I wanted to ask you, I didn't realize that you were also about to launch into a parking study. If you think it's worth us talking about doing something jointly before we either one of us goes off independently, you know, send me an email or reach me offline somehow so that we can talk about if it's worth at least somehow coordinating our efforts in our parking studies.
Yeah, I would welcome that for sure. We are waiting for some funding to kind of launch into that effort.
Same here.
But looking probably like late fall or so to start to kind of frame up a work program on that. But I would definitely welcome, you know, the coordination with you all, in particular as it relates to like the state line area. So thank you very much for responses.
Thanks, Crystal. Other APC members?
Yes, Sue Chandler here. Excellent presentation, Michael and Eric. I'm just a little bit curious as to whether or not you have a strategy in place for dealing with community members that might not be supportive of this plan and what we can possibly do to bring them on board. Thank you.
I think that Washoe County strategy is continued open communication. I know that our new commissioner, Commissioner Hill, is dedicated to open communication with the community. And as I mentioned, I think part of that communication is being sincere about what I mentioned, as this is being our starting point and not our end point. We're still taking community input on all of our plans, even down in the Meadows. But in the Tahoe Basin in particular, we take community input, whether we've just adopted a plan or whether we're in the adoption process, and it's meaningful to us. So I think the only way I have to answer your question is to just say that we're going to continue being sincere about listening to what people have to say about it as we begin to implement it. And as we begin to implement it, if people come forward and say, hey, this is not working out for us, or hey, I told you so, or whatever it may be, we're going to listen to it and we'll make adjustments as are necessary. I think that's the best answer I can give you.
Thank you. Excellent answer.
And I did want to chime in. I looked up on the TRPA code how height is treated for nonconformity, and any building being modified can maintain the existing nonconformity. But if you're doing anything further than modification, for example, reconstructing the entire structure, then you do have to comply with the current code standards for height.
Thank you, Michael. Other APC member questions, comments?
Hey, this is Jennifer. Yeah, I'll turn my camera on because I can now.
All right.
IT folks are amazing. They fixed me. I have a couple of items related to the compliance measures checklist. I think I finally figured out this monster and how it works with what we're doing today, which is actually the compliance evaluation of the area, the conformance review. One of the things talks about an MOU being negotiated subsequent to area plan adoption, and And I was wondering sort of what the timeline is for Washoe County's thinking on going to that next step where you would have something in place with TRPA that would then allow you to do your own permitting activities. Just so big picture planning, what does that look like? Are you going to take baby steps and implement this for a while and get to the MOU later?
Well, I think the honest answer is Washoe County has to decide what permitting it wants to do and what it doesn't want to do. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that that decision has been made, even though it's been on the table for a long time to be made. There's a variety of planning things that we clearly want to do in terms of discretionary permitting. I think that there's some concern on building permits. There's concern about training. And once again, Jennifer, my belief is that a communication blitz will change the landscape on that, but it hasn't happened yet. And right now, the county just isn't sure what it wants to do.
Oh, that totally makes sense. So, Michael, this may be a question for you, just procedurally. So until something like that happens, TRPA on any permitting activity goes through their own requirements and then also has to consider the area plan requirements in conjunction while issuing permits. I know you've had some other area plans under that have been approved for some time now. So just help me understand how that works.
Yeah, that's correct. Before an MOU is adopted, TRPA would do the full permit review from the TRPA side. The county still may have requirements for special use permits that are processed at the county side as well. But both agencies would be operating off of the standards in the area plan.
Thank you. I have a question.
Jennifer, I think that, I'm sorry, Jennifer. I think that we're very interested, like I said, in those kinds of discretionary reviews, having some kind of an MOU where people don't have to go through two processes. I mean, we've been interested in that for a long time. And we know that's something we'd like to pursue, but I think there's still just a lot of communication yet to be done on the building permit side of things.
Mr. Chairman, this is John Hester, if I might jump in. We actually have an MOU with Washoe County, and it was suspended a few years ago because of staff shortages on the county side. And so probably the starting point, Jennifer, would be looking at that MOU and saying, do we want to reinstate it as it is, or do we want to make some changes? But that's exactly where we are right now.
Yes, that's the very pragmatic where we are right now.
Thanks. So my next question is related to the compliance measures checklist, but also to attachment L, which is the adopting ordinance changes to the code of ordinance, where some code changes are being made, particularly with respect to parking standards, design standards, and signage. So it looks like these code changes are more renaming documents and renaming areas as opposed to maybe changing the standards and guidelines. Is that correct? Or from moving from your the stricken language, signage, parking, design standards, and guidelines for community plans of Washoe County, changing that to Tahoe Area Plan design standards and guidelines, are there technical standard changes that are occurring between those two documents, or are you just renaming them?
For the most part, it's being renamed. The existing standards and guidelines are being largely carried through. The county does have an implementing action where they're proposing to do a comprehensive amendment to the design guidelines, but that would be a future action. But I can tell you that we did update. I mean, there were some outdated design standards and guidelines that we did get rid of. I think there were a couple that we added in order to comply with Chapter 13 standards for the minimum requirements for design guidelines in an area plan. But it's pretty minimal as to what actually was changed on those documents.
Okay, so that ties back then to the compliance measures checklist on page 119, which is part of what caught my attention, because it says the area plan does not make any changes that would impact parking standards and parking management. And I don't know if any is just a red flag word, or if that language maybe needs to be massaged a little, just based on what you just said, Michael. So anyway, it's something to look at maybe on the compliance measures checklist before it goes to the governing board, if that language needs to be massaged a little bit. So it sounds like maybe some minor changes were made. So saying that there weren't any changes might be a little too comprehensive. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you're right. It is a little broad. There really weren't any major changes to the parking. The only change I can think of was that there was a standard added for parking for short-term rentals to align with the short-term rental ordinance. And there was a new policy added about doing a parking management plan. Okay. But for the most part, the existing standards for parking were carried through.
Great. So that helps me with the compliance measures checklist. The only other thing that I just wanted to mention in the checklist is on page 119 and 120, similar area, where it starts on tracking number 98 and goes down through 126. The narrative there looks like it might have carried forward from a prior document where it talks about compliance measures 99, 116, and 118 will, you know, benefit. But those particular numbers tie to South Shore transportation and roadway items instead of North Shore. So it looks like you got some typos in the checklist that can be fixed for governing board to tie the expected benefits of the Washoe County area plan to North Shore intersection improvements and North Shore roadway improvements instead of South Shore, I assume.
Yeah, we can make that change.
Wow, that's a good idea, Jennifer. Thank you so much. That's amazing.
Well, I use this checklist. It's been the bane of my existence to figure out exactly how to use it. Now that I finally have, it is a very useful tool. I just want to say that the entire package was really comprehensive. It was a lot to go through, but there's a lot of interaction between the documents and the chapters that all really go well together. And so I want to commend Washoe County and TRPA for putting together this package in a way that was easy to follow and comprehensive. Thanks.
Good catches, Jennifer. Let's see. Other APC members. Okay. Hearing none, I had questions on the MOU process too, Eric, and I'd be happy to chat with you about how we handled that on our end, if that's helpful at all.
Well, thank you very much, man. Yeah, I would love to chat with you. I think John's answer is exactly right. I mean, we do have one, and we need to decide how we want to move forward with that existing one, whether we reinstate it, change it, and, you know, what do we want to do? At least we have a good starting point for the discussion, an existing one to talk about. But I really think that we do have opportunities for more training and interaction and to just more communication will, like I said, change the landscape on how we think on that. So.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a big part of area plan adoptions, frankly, is just for customer service. ease of customer understanding of county rules versus TRPA rules. And if they can do one-stop shopping, you know, that makes all the difference in the world to an individual customer on being able to pursue their project. It accelerates implementation. It achieves our goals much better than people just getting frustrated and either quitting or doing things illegally without permits, et cetera. So it's a huge tool in moving this forward and implementing it, actually.
I agree.
Mr. Chairman, yeah. Jason Drew, I have a question for Eric.
Go ahead, Jason.
Eric, Crystal Bay and the state line area, there are some unique aspects to that that are different from the main part of Incline Village. How much did that come up during the process and both external in your communications with the community and then internally in your discussions with TRPA and county staff as you develop the plan? Because there are some pretty significant differences, and I'm just wondering if you feel comfortable that those are accounted for and there's flexibility within the plan, given that the plan covers the entirety of Washoe County at the lake. Is there a flexibility in the plan that allows to accommodate those differences?
Well, that's a thanks for bringing up Crystal Bay. I think the people who live there would be glad to hear that you brought them up. Many of the residents there clearly feel like they live in a little bit of a different place than Incline Village. The business feel is different. The history there is significant, and it brings a different community character or feel to it. So it's not just an on the surface perception. It is a different place. And from the very beginning of Washoe County's plans and TRPA's plans, we've always recognized that difference. There's always been a Crystal Bay community plan that was different for the Crystal Bay commercial area. And the Crystal Bay residential plan area statements were a little different that represented how they existed. And this new plan doesn't really change those differences that were highlighted all those years ago from the very beginning. It moves forward with the recognition, the same recognition that we've always had, that that place is a little bit different. I'm not sure what you mean in terms of flexibility. Like I said, I think that the concept was to maintain our longstanding perception that they do deserve to be treated slightly different. And so we didn't really change their community plan or their plan area statements, which are now regulatory zones, to try and make them more homogenous with the rest of our jurisdiction up in the basin. I think the big, when you talk to the community, both the businesses and the residents, the bigger concerns are how to move forward with the redevelopment of the old casino areas. A lot of the redevelopment energy is behind Crystal Bay in the old commercial area. So while we have all those enormous opportunities for environmental redevelopment that the plan represents, the community can be a little concerned about modernization. They like sort of their old feel. Multifamily is an issue, as it always is. I think even down here in the Meadows, when we want to build multifamily, we have to come about it with the community in a different way. So I think the challenges that we have today between the redevelopment efforts and the existing residents are really the same challenges that we had 10 and 15 years ago when the Biltmore started to talk about redeveloping into something different and Cal Neva started to talk about redeveloping. So it's some of the same challenges in order to represent that there is this important historic character. It is a different feel and a different community character than the rest of Incline Village, but to still not stymie that the important redevelopment energy that's up there because of the environmental redevelopment benefits that are very substantial there in Crystal Bay. So, gosh, I don't know if I've answered your question or not, but I don't think that our plan was to approach it differently, but to try and continue to respect what we feel we've noticed for 30 years.
You've covered it. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. Other APC member comments?
So, Mr. Chair, this is Steve DeShera.
Hi, Steve.
So I was going to make some comments, but I was going to wait until after you did the public hearing.
Okay, that sounds good. Why don't we then go now to public comment on this item? So to participate in the meeting, go to trpa.gov. In the calendar, click on Advisory Planning Commission meeting May 12th, 2021. There you'll find a link to the public webinar hosted on GoToWebinar. If any member of the public wishes to address the Advisory Planning Commission, please use the hand-raising function now, and you'll be unmuted by a TRPA staff member.
All right, Mr. Chair, Carol Black has her hand up. Carol, go ahead and address the APC.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Hello? Carol. Yes.
Okay, thanks. I'll be brief and largely repeat what I said in writing. Currently proposed Washoe County Tahoe Area Plan represents an intense effort envisioning broad change with impacts anticipated for years. Unfortunately, there are still some concerns. The document is long, complex, with many revisions. For a document this size, complexity, and import, public explanation and discussion opportunity to date has been infrequent and, I believe, insufficient. There was one public workshop and some CAB sessions years ago, but nothing reviewing recent revisions since 2019. I will say that TRPA's interactive online information map is very helpful, and Washoe County's offer today of future dialogue and potential adjustment much appreciated. The content concerns include in the single public workshop presentation 2 years ago, regarding zoning changes and use approach, inaccurate statements were, I believe, made to the public. With few exceptions, zoning and permissible use changes were basically dismissed, including, more recently, the interesting approach of completely circumventing SDR items and impacts in this document. In addition, the proposal includes some content which appears misleading and/or incomplete. First, changes resulting from de facto adoption of TRPA zoning change. Changes result from de facto adoption of TRPA zoning, even though Washoe County classification may be more restrictive and therefore presumably compatible with TRPA. There was one statement addressing this, which I can't find now, but maybe I missed. And resident concerns about the impact of the imposed town center design and density in this small area have been largely ignored. Incomplete assumptions regarding area occupancy, where residents are considered but not occupancy by transient tourists, which have substantially increased area occupancy, particularly during busy seasons with more vehicles and people present, hasn't been fully considered. The qualitative EIC fails to capture current and likely future adverse impacts regarding safety, evacuation, environment, as well as loss of housing supply and neighborhood compatibility, although I guess we're going to be looking at the housing, which is terrific to hear. Area plan priorities, particularly the transportation and parking as an example, don't reliably address root causes. There's emphasis on alternative transport modes, yet no attention to, again, the underlying root cause of added area occupancy from transient tourism. And interestingly, the recent mobility hub edits didn't capture the significant discussion updates and concept flexibility now included in the RTP. And the reference, which Eric actually, sorry, Eric, made again this morning to two incline hubs is incorrect. I checked every RTP diagram in the recent version, and their second hub is not there. Robust, timely measurement remains a challenge, though efforts to address added to the RTP should also be here. Threshold and compliance assessments are based on outdated 2015 results, and the IEC is greater than 1 year old despite interim plan review and modification. Conclusion. The area plan is currently drafted includes elements of significant concern to me, my family, other residents, and should be amended. And I think your constituents deserve better. And hope that the dialogue today will encourage further discussion and appropriate modifications going forward. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for your comment, Ms. Black. We really appreciate it. We'll give Eric a chance to respond if he chooses after we hear all the public comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are no other hands raised to make a comment on this item.
Thank you, Catherine. Eric, Michael, do you wish to respond to any of Carol's comments?
This is Eric. I'll say that I always appreciate Ms. Black's comments. They're thorough and comprehensive, and we always take them into consideration, and we're glad to hear that she is interested in continued dialogue with us going forward. So that's what we'll plan to do.
Thank you, Eric. Michael, do you have anything?
I just wanted to add that the county has committed to doing additional outreach with a lot of the implementing actions that they're proposing. With regards to the mobility hub, there will be additional planning efforts that will occur in, for the Incline Village Commercial Town Center, where the mobility hub is located. And so the county has committed to doing an updated conceptual plan for that area. They've committed to doing a transit master plan for the community of Incline Village and doing a parking management plan. And that should address a lot of the issues that were raised during the mobility hub discussions. As far as the age of the document and the changes that have been made, the plan has not undergone significant changes since it was published in January of 2020. The county did make a few small modifications during the public hearing process when it went through the Board of County Commissioners, and those were largely in response to community input. They were in order to address some concerns that were raised. So for the most part, the plan has been in its current form for about a year, and there haven't been too many changes to it. So those are just a couple points I wanted to address.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it. Mr. Teixeira, why don't we go to you now after public comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, Steve Teixeira. So this is really a great starting point, as both Michael and Eric have said. It really is a starting point. I mean, I've been in the basin 48 years now, and I think sometimes I can appreciate the fact that Incline and Crystal Bay feel like they're not given the attention that they deserve. And I think this is a clear indication that they're getting some important attention from TRPA, from the county, from TDD, and others. And I think it's really important that I know there's been a lot of trepidation in the community about transit and transportation and mobility hubs, but I hope people will remain engaged and provide input to those processes as they go forward. The transit master plan, the mobility hub studies to find out where a good location for that might be. So I'm very encouraged as a longtime observer of Tahoe to see these plans moving forward. I want to commend Commissioner Alexis Hill for helping to provide some fresh momentum to get this plan done and to move it forward. And it really is a starting point. So there's lots of opportunities to have input from the community and from others of us who are involved and care about those communities here in our Tahoe Basin. I just had one other additional question. And if you covered it, I apologize. But Eric, if you could talk a little bit more about the timing of the housing study.
We are just launching that. We've had some preliminary meetings with state how we're going to put together the stakeholder group and the committees that we're going to use. And so I don't think that we have even developed a timeline yet. Conceptually, we've talked about having something done this fall, but I don't think that we have published an actual timeline yet. We've literally just kicked off.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that further information about it. I think it's really important. There's been a lot of debate in Incline and Crystal Bay about housing and who might need it or who doesn't need it or who should be there, who shouldn't be there. And I think a housing study, as we've seen on the North Shore, on the California side, and here on the South Shore, housing studies can really help quantify what the needs are and help developers target what the needs are in a community to help the community. We know that housing is a huge issue, certainly from a business perspective. Lack of affordable housing is impacting our businesses and it's impacting, you know, our community. So anyway, really appreciate it and wanted to thank you, Eric, for how much time and effort you've put into this and to help move it across the line to this point. And really appreciate your presentation today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Steve. Any final thoughts from APC members? Okay. Great. Thanks to all involved again. And now I think I'm ready to entertain the motions on this item. The motions are set forth on page 20 of the packet. And Catherine, can you bring those up on our screen? Is that possible?
Mr. Chairman, I'll obviously be sitting this one out. I'm sure we have a quorum without me.
I believe that's true. Yes. And in order for the motions to pass, an affirmative vote of the majority of the quorum of the committee is required. Tracy, just so you know, Mr. Letton and Mr. Booth both chatted me that they needed to step away for a meeting and they'll be back around 11. And so they might miss this particular motion, but I believe we have sufficient presence without them. Would anyone care to make the first motion? We have three of them.
This is John. I'll make the first motion.
Okay, John, thank you.
Recommend governing board approval of the required findings, including a finding of no significant effect for the adoption of the Washoe County Tile Area Plan and amendments to chapters 34, 36, and 38 of the TRP code ordinances as provided in attachment D.
Thank you, John. Anyone care to second that motion?
This is Crystal Jacobson. I'll second it.
Thank you, Crystal. And Tracy, could we do a roll call vote, please?
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Ms. Stala?
Aye.
Mr. Smokey? Mr. Hitchcock?
Yes.
Mr. Letton?
Yes.
Ms. Jacobson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Ferris?
Yes.
Ms. Carr?
Yes.
Mr. Drew?
Yes.
Mr. Drake?
Yes.
Ms. Chandler?
Yes.
Mr. Booth? Mr. Oling?
Yes.
Mr. Ferry?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Thank you, Tracy. Who would like to do the second motion?
This is Crystal Jacobson. I'll make a motion to recommend the governing board adoption of ordinance 2021-blank, amending ordinance 2019-03 as previously amended to amend TRPA's regional plan to incorporate the Washoe County Tahoe area plan as provided in Attachment K.
Thank you, Crystal.
Thanks,
John. Okay, Tracy, another roll call vote, please.
Ms. Chandler?
Yes.
Mr. Oling?
Yes.
Mr. Drake?
Yes.
Mr. Booth? Mr. Drew?
Yes.
Ms. Carr?
Yes.
Ms. Jacobson?
Yes.
Ms. Ferris?
Yes.
Mr. Letton?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Hitchcock?
Yes.
Ms. Stala?
Aye.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Ferry?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, that motion also passes.
Thank you, Tracy. And the last motion.
This is Crystal Jacobson. I'll make a motion to recommend Governing Board adoption of Ordinance 2021-blank, amending Ordinance 87-9 as previously amended to amend TRPA's Code of Ordinances to incorporate references to the Washoe County Tahoe Area Plan into Chapters 34, 36, and 38 as provided in Attachment L.
Thank you, Crystal.
This is Susan. I will second that.
Thank you, Susan. All right, we have a motion and a second. Tracy, our final roll call vote, please.
Mr. Oling?
Aye.
Ms. Chandler?
Aye.
Mr. Drake?
Yes.
Mr. Drew?
Yes.
Mr. Booth? Ms. Carr?
Yes.
Ms. Jacobson?
Yes.
Mr. Letton?
Yes.
Mr. Hitchcock?
Yes.
Ms. Ferris?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Stala?
Aye.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Ferry?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, the final motion passes.
Thank you, Tracy, and thank you to everyone, and congratulations to Eric Young and Washoe County. We're one step closer to adoption. We will follow it through to the governing board with you.
It's actually, I can't quite even tell you how excited I am right now. So thank you very much, everybody. Thank you for your comments and for your questions, and on to the governing board.
Yes, onward and upward. Great. Fantastic. Okay, let's now move on to item six, which are planning matters. Item 6A is a briefing on the draft 2019 threshold evaluation. The TRPA staff report can be found on page 189 of your packet. And I'm now going to turn this over to Ken Caseman with TRPA to present. Take it away, Ken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tracy, if I could get control as well, please. Thank you. Excellent. Good morning, members of the Planning Commission. For the record, again, I'm Ken Caseman. I am the Research Analysis Division Manager for the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. And it's really a pleasure to be here today to discuss the 2019 draft threshold evaluation. I know many of you participated in our TAI steering committee meeting last week and may have seen some of this content. this presentation will be a little bit different, but did want to just, you know, recognize first and foremost that, you know, this evaluation draws on the work, not just of TRPA, but of so many of our partners, our implementers, our in the EIP, our federal and state and local agencies, as well as our research institutions in the region. And, you know, this evaluation, you know, we came to you in December to present a little bit of the introduction of the format. We've moved to really a new way to present this information through this online dashboard on Lake Tahoe Info. And so we'll spend a few minutes kind of talking about that at the end and demonstrate how to navigate that site. But really the goal of today is to go through a couple of the highlights and some of the key findings and results for this evaluation, and to provide you an opportunity to review the evaluation, submit comments to us if you have them, and, you know, we'll be working to make any necessary changes. The plan right now is to bring forward the final evaluation likely in June, so in about 6 weeks. As we go through again, we'll spend a few minutes just on some of the background of our threshold system itself, some of the key findings of this evaluation, I'll spend a few minutes going through how to navigate the threshold dashboard on LTInfo. This is our seventh comprehensive evaluation of environmental conditions in the region. Going back to the adoption of the regional plan in 87, we've had threshold evaluations every 5 years and then every 4 years. And really, you know, thresholds are the region's long-term goals. And so it's important to point out that, you know, things don't change that much in 4 years. And so, you know, when we look at some of our standards, you know, the goals are really decades out. These are long-term goals, large, you know, big goals. And so, you know, oftentimes when you look at these evaluations, what we're talking about is incremental progress. And that's certainly what we've seen in the prior evaluations, and what we see in this evaluation is incremental progress towards achieving our goals. We also, as I mentioned, you know, this evaluation is really about transition. We are in the midst of numerous points of transition within our system. And, you know, you're likely aware of many of these, but I'll point out a few of those areas where we're seeing transition and responding to it with this evaluation. The first is that the system itself, as you know, is under change. So the last two threshold evaluations in 2011 and again in 2015 were peer reviewed, and we asked the reviewers not only to look at our methods and assessment technique for how we were evaluating standards, but we also asked them to look at the standards themselves and to recommend changes to the standards themselves. And those reviews set up our threshold update process that we're all, you know, familiar with at this point. But we've already made significant changes as a result of those peer reviews. We've removed redundant standards and policy statements. And you know, just last week, or I guess 2 weeks ago now, the governing board adopted the first new threshold standard in years, and the first new category since 1982. So decades. And so, you know, that new category, our transportation and sustainable communities threshold category, will be reported in the final evaluation. It obviously isn't represented in the draft that we're talking about today, because that standard had not yet been adopted when we released this draft evaluation. So this evaluation itself is looking at 146 standards. And again, because of the changes that I just discussed, that's down from 178 standards that were evaluated in the 2015 threshold evaluation, without changing any of our environmental protections in the region. We also, again, even though there's fewer standards that we're reporting on, we were actually able, because of changes to our monitoring and evaluation programs, we were able to actually report on 13 additional standards than we did in the 2015 evaluation. And, you know, it's I talk about this transition. One of the key ways that we've seen transition in this report is through our methods and the technologies that we can use to evaluate our threshold standards. So things like using LIDAR to capture impervious coverage throughout the region and collecting high resolution aerial imagery that helps us, again, evaluate both vegetation conditions and other aspects of the regional system. We also are using the eco-object data that is integral to the Lake Tahoe West project and helps take remote sensing data and LIDAR to really look at forest health conditions and to distinguish even individual tree populations within the region. We also collected the first lake-wide aquatic invasive species survey that looks at native and invasive biomass within the lake and allows us to really set up future evaluations for change detection. So again, a lot of transition that we're seeing in the data itself. It's also transitional in the way that we're presenting this information. We talked about this with you in December. We've updated and really overhauled the dashboard that we had on Lake Tahoe Info and replaced what was, you know, more than 1,300 pages of report and appendices from 2015 and provides an interactive map, tables, and allows for these interconnections between all of the different systems on Lake Tahoe Info to really illustrate and demonstrate the contributions both of the EIP as well as permitting actions on private lands to threshold attainment. So this is really moving our system to the next iteration, to that one-stop shop for evaluating our success as a region and our success of the EIP in implementing the regional plan. The dashboard that we can see here, this is the actual threshold dashboard that's on LT Info. This is the centerpiece of our digital first initiative, again, that we talked about in December. And this format is modeled after the best practice for presenting dynamic information, and it's complex, but really allows for accountability and transparency in our systems. It makes this information much more transparent and accessible. And again, better links actions to outcomes and allows for real-time updates. So we're really, you know, proud to show this off, and hopefully you've had a chance to look through it. But if not, you know, hopefully you'll walk through it and provide feedback to us. We'll spend again a few minutes just sort of going through the high level, and then I'll dig into some of the details. But as I said, we reported on 113 of the 146 threshold standards in this evaluation. So that's about 77% of standards that were reported on. That's up from 68% in the 2015 evaluation. And of those standards that we report status on, 80% are in attainment. In this evaluation, we had actually 7 standards that moved into attainment that were in non-attainment status previously. And we had 1 standard that moved from in attainment to out of attainment, and again, I'll talk about that in a moment. We were unable to report on exactly 33 standards, and that's primarily because we either do not have defined targets for those standards, so nothing to evaluate against, or because data were unavailable. Either there's no established monitoring program, or in some instances, the data just simply wasn't collected because of other factors. And again, we're working to both improve our reporting and categorization of our results, and looking to continue with our threshold update process to better align our monitoring evaluation systems so that as we move into the next evaluations, we can report again on even more of these standards and make this reporting more meaningful. So again, taking into account all of the standards in the evaluation, 62% are in attainment, 16 are out of attainment, and again, we did not determine a status for 22% of our current standards. So this chart is just a little different way to look at this, the distribution of our standards. So in this chart, each icon represents an individual unique standard in each category. And those that are green are those standards that are in attainment. The red are standards that are out of attainment. And the gray are the standards where no status was determined. So of the standards that we're able to report on for air quality, fisheries, scenic, and recreation, they're all in attainment. In noise, you'll see that most of the standards that are in attainment are those for our plan areas. And most of the ones that were out of attainment are those that relate to single event standards. So we have standards for aircraft and standards for watercraft that are out of attainment. Most of the single event standards are actually not monitored. And this is primarily because of the resource needs in order to do this. And quite frankly, the last peer review identified these standards as being too complex, too resource intensive, and really unrealistic for us to both measure and really for management action to address those standards. So again, this is a primary area that's that we'll likely be looking at for a future threshold update. In soil conservation, our SEZ standards are primarily out of attainment, but as I'll talk about in a moment, our restoration standard is actually very close to being achieved and a huge milestone there. In vegetation, the standards for our uncommon plants and our old growth standards are out of attainment. So here we're talking, again, old growth, the standards can only reach attainment at the rate that trees are going to grow. And in uncommon plants, we're talking about our deep water plant communities that have seen a fairly significant decline over recent years. And again, we're working with our science community to better understand that trend. In water quality, again, this is another area where most of our standards are not measured, either because we don't have specific targets or we simply don't have the monitoring data. And as you likely know, we've already, in September of last year, our threshold update stakeholder working group and the Tahoe Science Advisory Council have already recommended that we reorganize and update our water quality standards to enable better tracking and reporting in this critical area. So, you know, we'll see movement on threshold update in that specific category to address those standards that are gray on this chart. So moving over to trends, in this evaluation, again, 96% of the trends that are reported were either stable or were improving. And again, it's important to keep in mind when we talk about environmental resource management that so often stability is the goal. In fact, more than a third of our threshold standards either are for the non-degradation of a resource, or they direct the agency or the region to specifically maintain an environmental value. And so, so again, for so many of our standards, the goal is little or no change. You know, when we look at this, it's really encouraging to see again 96% of our standards falling into those categories of either not changing or improving. As we discussed on the threshold status side, on the trend side as well, we reported on 13 additional standards this evaluation, bringing the grand total up to 54% of our standards. And that, again, that compares to 45% of our standards that we report trend on in the 2015 evaluation. We'll jump into a few of the highlights. The first area is really to talk about our stream environment zones. You know, we talked about this in detail in December, but with funding from the EPA, TRPA and our partners completed the first comprehensive baseline assessment of stream environment zone condition in the region. This was a multi-year project that used both field collected data as well as remote sensing data to assess the condition of all stream environment zones in the region. This is an incredible amount of effort and really provides a benchmark for us to both assess the status and trend for our future evaluations and also to look at the existing conditions. So this assessment was instrumental to our stream habitat standards and our fisheries category, as well as to look at our stream environment zone standards that are in soils. This will help set the foundation for updating our stream environment zone goals as we start to reach the goal for restoration for stream environment zones. I think we would all acknowledge that the work isn't done. And so as we look to set a new restoration goal, this benchmark is instrumental to that. And it also helps both update the threshold and to guide where our investments from the EIP in terms of project prioritization and restoration efforts will be focused. The next area I just wanted to highlight, and again, this is one of the areas that's really incredible. The technology that we've been able to implement with the online dashboard is really incredible to see. In Scenic, we monitor over 869 different scenic viewpoints from our roadways, from the shoreline, and from public recreation areas and bike trails throughout the region. And the evaluation actually provides you all of those points, so you can look at individual points and see how it was scored. And you can actually click on that point and pull up a photo. And so you can actually see exactly what we were evaluating for the scenic improvement for each scenic viewpoint. 93% of our viewpoints either met or exceeded the threshold standard. The vast majority of those points are really just stable, like we talked about. You know, stability is the goal often in our scenic system. We did see 11 of our scenic viewpoints actually increase their scores in this evaluation compared to 2015, and none of our viewpoints had a decline in this evaluation. So again, a real highlight area for our scenic viewpoints. Another area that I wanted to highlight, this is the one standard that I mentioned that actually declined. It dropped out of attainment. And I wanted to spend a few minutes just sort of explaining why. So Tahoe yellowcress, hopefully everyone knows, but it's a small, rare mustard-like plant that only grows on the exposed shoreline of Lake Tahoe. Its population and its densities are very dependent on lake level. When the lake is high, the populations drop, and when the lake is low, TYC tends to just explode. Because the lake has been high for the last several years, the populations are down. And so because of that, we're out of attainment. But if you look really closely at this chart, it's important to note that the current population numbers are roughly double where we were in the last time that we had sustained lake levels as high as they are today. And it's important to note that because there's been a significant effort to build our Tahoe yellowcress conservation strategy and an MOU that includes the TRPA, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Forest Service, the Nevada Natural Heritage Program, Nevada State Lands, Forestry and Parks, California State Lands, Parks and Fish and Wildlife, the Tahoe Conservancy, the League of State of Lake Tahoe, and the Tahoe Lakefront Owners Association. Because this conservation strategy is so robust, TYC was actually removed from the Endangered Species Candidate List in 2015, which is a huge, huge deal. Another area that, I wanted to highlight, and we talked about this as well in December in our monitoring presentation that Sean gave, is that we've seen improvement in our wildlife standards, and particularly as a result of the efforts that were made to protect our nest areas from disturbance from hiking and climbing activities. We've seen the highest populations of peregrine falcon and the highest number of active nests in Tahoe in decades. So again, another really good story here where we're seeing improvement in our wildlife categories. Now, sort of shifting into some areas that where we're seeing the impacts of climate change, and these are particularly visible in air quality and water quality standards, which are again two areas that our region has invested heavily in, and we're seeing those investments and those gains being influenced by climate change. So the first area is air quality, and again, I want to be clear, air quality in the region continues to be very good. In fact, nearly all of our standards are in attainment. But the air quality concerns of today are very different than they were when the standards were originally adopted. In the past, we were very concerned about auto emissions. Today, it's extreme fire events. And with the increasing severity and intensity of wildfires, particularly outside of our region, are impacting our air quality in Tahoe. And you can see on the left, this is the annual average chart of our large particulates. And what we're seeing is, on average, our annual rates are decreasing. And this is a positive thing. But what you can see on the right is that both the frequency and both the frequency and the intensity that we're seeing, our maximum 24-hour values for air quality are growing. And so as a result of these, you know, large intense wildfires across the West, we are seeing those peaks get higher and become more frequent. And of course, we're doing what we can locally. The Forest Health subprogram of the EIP, the Tahoe Fire and Fuels teams are working to reduce the in-basin risks of catastrophic wildfire and to look at fuels reduction in region. And our implementers, through their street sweeping efforts, are also looking at reducing particulates, both in the air as well as those that may settle into the lake. The next area that I wanted to just spend a moment on is lake clarity. And, you know, again, the historic decline in clarity has been well documented. As we know, between the late 60s and 2000, nearly 30 feet of clarity was lost. But because of the aggressive action of our land managers and partners, we've halted that decline. And really, since 2000, the lake's clarity has remained fairly stable. And our long-term trend is encouraging. But what we're seeing is a divergence between summer and winter clarity. While our winter clarity appears stable or improving, summer clarity continues to decline. And our research indicates that the summer clarity declines are likely tied to interconnected issues of climate change and invasive species. Climate change, primarily because as we're seeing more rain, precipitation fall as rain and not snow, that inflow to the lake is carrying with it higher sediment, but because that inflow is warmer, it's not plunging as deep into the lake and not carrying those suspended sediments to the lake bottom, but keeping those high concentrations of suspended sediments higher in the water column. We're also seeing, again, because that water that's flowing into the lake isn't as cold, it's also causing the lake not to mix as frequently. And there's a number of dynamics involved in that. But generally, if the lake isn't mixing, then again, those relatively rich surface waters, rich with sediment, aren't being pushed down to the bottom and aren't taking that sediment down to the lake bottom. And instead, it's staying in the water column and affecting clarity. And then again, the interconnected issues of climate change with invasive species, we're seeing the lake become much more hospitable to clarity impairing algae called Zeclatella. And so again, what we're working to do is better understand these drivers, particularly of the summer clarity declines. It's a major priority, obviously, of both states and so many of our partner agencies and the Tahoe Science Advisory Council. And we continue to work very closely with the science community to understand the causes and how to influence these declines. But I want to be clear that what we're doing is making a difference. The clarity would be much worse without the regional investments, and particularly the Tahoe TMDL. Our implementing partners continue to exceed annual load reduction milestones. And in the 2020 performance report, every implementer exceeded their credit targets, and the cumulative load reductions are well on the way to achieving the second five-year milestone that was established by the TMDL. What we're doing is working. And again, understanding what climate change means to the physical and ecological dynamics of the lake is still under investigation. We're going to work with our science partners to develop management strategies that influence and seek to adapt to the effects of climate change. So with that, I'd like to spend a few minutes just walking through the dashboard itself and providing some tips and tricks for how to navigate the dashboard. And so I'll switch over now quickly to that. Okay. So just quickly, in terms of sort of guidance, hopefully everyone knows the address for Lake Tahoe Info. But if for some reason you can't remember it, you can get to it easily from the TRPA website. At the bottom here, there's a click link for Lake Tahoe Info. And again, the threshold dashboard is right here on the right-hand side, and so you can click into it from there. You can also go directly to thresholds.laketahoeinfo.org. On the main page, again, the way that we're presenting this threshold dashboard and really the 2019 threshold evaluation, you can start out on the main page, and if you're interested in a particular category, you can just simply click into that category itself. Or if you scroll down to the very bottom, each of the categories are listed, and you can see the 2011, 2015, and 2019 evaluation status. The easy way to do this is to simply click the expand level button here, and that will expand out to each individual standard of the 146 that I mentioned. And again, from here, you can click into a specific page and go directly to that indicator page. And just by means of sort of review, the way that we've outlined this is basically a summary paragraph that explains the standard itself and why it's important. We have the a summary of the data itself. And again, these are interactive charts that allow you to view that data through time. We have the evaluation status for 2019 here. And the text of the standard itself is here on the right-hand side. So you can see exactly what we are evaluating. If you scroll further down, we have key points. And again, these are just highlights and key things that we wanted to highlight in the evaluation. And you can also see the map itself. So here you can actually click in to see the specific monitoring location. And if you click into that, it'll actually take you over to our monitoring dashboard on LT Info, where you can get even more specific detail about that monitoring location. You can see images of the monitoring site itself, as well as the raw data that contributed to this evaluation. Going back, we also, at the bottom of each page, have links that provide even more detail that provide both EIP actions that contribute to this threshold standard. So in this case, you can see the EIP action priority to build bike trails. And so again, you can click into this and now we move over to the IP area of LT Info, and you can see the specific projects that contributed to this threshold for this period. And so again, and you can see who funded those projects, et cetera. And so it's really powerful to be able to go back and forth between the different places within LT Info. And again, you can either backtrack with the back button, or you can use the links at the top. For even more detail, you can actually click into this data center page, which will actually show even more detail about the threshold itself. You can click to each of the specific indicator pages within the prior evaluations. And there's even more detail here about exactly how we evaluated the threshold. Just more detail about that standard itself. And each of these you can click into for even more detail. How it was evaluated, what is the rationale for status and trend, and our confidence levels in our determinations. The last thing that I wanted to highlight, because Jennifer spent so much time talking about it, compliance measure data is listed here on the About page. And so we have our updated compliance measures that are updated as of this evaluation. So this is our latest compliance measure chart. For those that are interested, our cumulative accounting dashboard. So this is the latest information related to our development rights in the region threshold attainment and mitigation funds and other areas. So there's a lot of detail here. And again, these are interactive charts that allow you to get this information. We have bank development rights. We have all of our conversions and other reporting here. So again, really, really powerful information. Just to highlight, if you get sort of lost in the site, you can always from the dropdown here, get back to threshold dashboard this way. The last thing that I want to highlight is just, this is our evaluation. This is the platform for it. We are taking public comments and responding to those for the final release. You can provide comments or feedback using the link here at the bottom of the main page, or on a specific indicator page. There's a link at the top of each page to provide feedback. So you can ask questions, you can provide feedback, and we'll address those in the final evaluation. There's also throughout the site, if there's any question or if you get lost, you can click this request support button on the upper right-hand side, and that will automatically send an email to our team, and we can help you navigate the site if there's any questions. So with that, I'm happy to answer questions and really appreciate the time today.
Excellent, Ken. Thank you so much. Lots of fascinating information in that detailed presentation. Lots going on. It's awesome to see the advancements TRPA is making technologically and with the dashboard and daylighting the information for the public and stakeholders. It's a model, I think, I'll just speak for myself personally for what we could do better as a county. And so I really do appreciate it. And let me now go to my fellow APC members. Does anyone have comments, questions for Ken on the threshold evaluation?
Mr. Chair, this is Kevin. I have a question.
Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, Ken, first of all, great presentation. And like a friend had mentioned, the advances in just displaying technical information by the agency has really come a long way. So it's very impressive. So good work there. I have a little bias since my background's in water quality, but I noticed that most of the indicators that you mentioned that aren't being measured are in the water quality threshold, including other lakes and stormwater runoff and tributaries. And so they seem to be
you know, fairly significant categories, indicators, and I'm wondering, is it just a change in philosophy as far as what to monitor, or is there some funding shortfalls, or maybe a combination of both?
Yeah, thank you, Kevin, for the question. You know, again, a lot of the areas that we're unable to report on, particularly in water quality, relate to areas where there were just the standards themselves were established, but there were never specific and measurable targets that were established for those standards. And again, it's something that is top of mind. We have prioritized water quality as one of the next areas that we will move forward in our threshold update process, and we already have recommendations from the Science Council and from our threshold update working group to address those. But it really is somewhat reflective again of the fact that, you know, most of our standards were adopted in 1982, so they're, you know, approaching 40 years old, and you know, while the EIP has looked at, you know, updated performance measures and updated targets, we haven't always brought that back into the thresholds. And so I think, you know, that's really where we want to look at both the science and technology that have occurred, you know, since the 80s, and bring our standards, our threshold standards, up to par and really address some of those deficiencies where either there's new technologies and new ways to evaluate, or where, you know, the standards themselves have just shifted in terms of priorities or in terms of, you know, in terms of the constituents that are important. So it's definitely something that we're addressing. But, you know, this evaluation right now is really just reporting on those standards as they're adopted.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. Do you see some of these potential changes coming from the council, possibly revising thresholds and or just approaches and different types of monitoring, or maybe it's a combination of both, and that information will be included in this update?
Yeah, we have recommendations, I think, for both, changing the text and the standards themselves, as well as monitoring evaluation recommendations that we would then flow through.
Great. Thank you, Cam.
Thanks, Kevin. Eric Young has a comment, question. Go ahead, Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to get us too far on a tangent, but, you know, I just spoke about the Washoe County area plan being committed to doing an urban forestry plan of some sort. And I know others around the basin are doing them. I'm very unfamiliar with what most jurisdictions do when they do an urban forestry plan, but I'm fascinated by your ability to generate data around vegetation and forestry. And I am cognizant of the thresholds that you're trying to achieve, or we're all trying to achieve. And it's making me wonder if we should contemplate our urban forestry strategy or plan more in the context of developing policies or what have you for these thresholds than maybe than strictly what a traditional urban forestry plan would be. Am I off base in thinking that, or does that make any sense? Can you help me think about that? Thank you.
Yeah, it does make sense. And again, you know, a lot of, you know, so forest health is one area, again, that we have prioritized for our threshold updates. We recognize that our existing standards are somewhat generic in terms of their utility. And I think, you know, the Lake Tahoe West project is helping us to really define and think about how we evaluate, you know, that urban forest interface and how we think about forestry. And again, these new technologies Being able to use remote sensing technology to look at individual trees or to classify both the species type as well as the health of our forests using remote sensing technology is an incredible tool. And so, you know, a lot of that, both the goals, the data and analysis technique are really being shaped by that Lake Tahoe West project. And then likely, you know, those tools would be expanded outside of just that one project area on the West Shore to really the rest of the region and beyond. Again, you know, one of the key things that helps us do that is having that LIDAR data capture, and we're working with, in this case, we worked with NASA and the Jet Propulsion Lab and UNR to collect and analyze that data. But it's really, you know, integral to that analysis is having that really detailed LIDAR footprint. And so, you know, there are data collection efforts that are happening now, and the cost of those data collection has come down significantly to the point that it really is an incredible tool that can help build those plans for sure.
Mr. Chairman, this is John Hester. For Eric, we have a staff person. We have actually a program, forest health program, in our environmental improvement division. And Kat McIntyre is the person who manages that and also staffs our governing board committee on forest health. And I think probably it would be good for you two to connect before you get going on your urban forestry work, because she's got great expertise, and we've got a committee that's looked at a lot of these aspects of how to manage the forest health. So I'll get you in touch with her when you get ready to work on that.
Thank you very much to both of you. I think more networking in that particular community is exactly what we need to start with. So thanks to both of you.
Thanks, Eric. Vice Chair Carr has some questions. Go ahead.
Thanks. I'm first of all, I love LTInfo. I think it's amazing, and I totally agree with your approach to make this threshold evaluation a more dynamic, you know, area where people can, you know, click into, dig into, instead of just having it be, what do you say, a 1300 page boring old report that somebody has to go get a copy of and flip through or whatever. Not that it was boring, it's just, you know, paper is just not the way to go anymore. So I think it's a move in the right direction. But with that said, part of what I do for the state of Nevada is manage records. So this is a draft threshold evaluation. There won't be any such thing as a report, really. When it becomes final, what does that look like? Does the portal become static for the next 4 years, or does it? So help me understand what having a final sort of dashboard means.
Yes, thank you for the question. So maybe just to start out, when we release the final evaluation, again, I think currently planned for June, we will likely package together an executive summary that could be used as a handout with our legislative partners and you know others, and so you know there will be sort of a PDF of that summary available, but really the dashboard is our primary avenue for presenting this information. And we've been working with our technology partner, Sitka Technology Group, that has helped build out Lake Tahoe Info over the last 5 or 6 years. This was something that we've been contemplating and thinking about. And quite frankly, we've been working on the threshold dashboard for the last, you know, year or so. And what they actually provided for us was an entirely separate site that we could make all of our changes on and still have the existing 2015 threshold dashboard still visible to the public. And so using sort of that same philosophy and that same technology tool, we are currently actually tracking changes with a change management system where we can actually sort of duplicate a page and make those edits. And once we move to our final release, those edits will then go live and will be published to the site. And we will have a change log that shows, you know, the user that made the changes and when it was made and exactly what was changed. And so we can produce sort of a summary sheet that would outline those changes when they're made between draft and final. We're also starting to talk with our partners about, okay, what does the 2023 threshold evaluation look like? And how do we ensure that the 2019 evaluation stays as a static evaluation, but then we can add on the 2023 information? So what we'll likely do is essentially the same thing we did with this one, create a duplicate site that we then update, and then we would make live as a draft in 2023. And throughout LT Info, we actually have a test site that sort of mirrors the production environment all the time. And so, again, they're really familiar with sort of moving back and forth between those two sort of test site and production sites. And so it allows us to sort of make these changes, see how they're going to look, and then publish them to the production site when it's appropriate. So that's sort of our philosophy in terms of how we will make those changes. The other thing to point out, again, is because of the interactivity of LT Info, on our monitoring dashboard, we link oftentimes to the same information. But, you know, again, in the 2019 draft evaluation, there are 194 different data visualizations, maps, and charts that are presented throughout the evaluation. And those will remain as they are. Or as they would be with any changes that are made for the final release. But our monitoring dashboard actually would then be updated as we have real-time information come in that would then carry that information forward. And so, again, having those links to our monitoring programs embedded here, you'll be able to see updated information, but the threshold dashboard itself, those status and trend calls, will remain the same until the next evaluation comes forward. So hopefully that answers the question, but happy to take any follow-ups if you have them.
Yeah, I think it really does, because it provides some comfort that once the threshold evaluation is final, you know, if we are in, you know, 2022 and something about the threshold has improved, either we've, you know, changed a threshold, we've eliminated a threshold, we've combined thresholds, someone can still go back to the 2019 document and see what was in place at that time. Or, you know, in some future year, you know, someone asks for that record, you know, that TRPA can produce that record, because that's, you know, basically what we're obligated to do as state records managers, is to be able to produce historic information when it's requested. So, it sounds like you've thought through or thinking that through, but it is a critical part of what we do as state stewards. And so I'm glad you're talking about it and that it's that you're working on strategies to make sure that we can provide historical records as they're needed in the future. I struggle with it with other databases that we have internally as well. I've also asked you know, Jason about it a few times, because our crediting program is also on the same site, and I get nervous about, you know, being able to access historic records in our own program that's now run through the same platform. So I appreciate you working on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Jennifer. Great question. And how about other APC members? Go ahead, unmute yourself and speak up.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Steve, go ahead.
Thank you. Ken, I did see your presentation at the TIE Steering Committee, and so I saw it the second time today. It's very good. I agree with the comments that my APC colleagues have made about the amazing work that's been done to display this very technical data, make it a lot more user-friendly to people who are interested. You know, my experience has been a lot of people in the basin don't always understand planning and things like that. And, you know, not that everybody would go to this site and completely understand everything, but it's certainly really important that people who are interested can do it and get a lot of information. And you know, too, it's very helpful when we work with our congressional delegation, when we work with our state elected officials, and of course, local elected officials. It's great to have them say, go to this site and, you know, get information, and they can go and investigate and look at things and learn from it from afar. It's quite amazing. So I didn't want your presentation to go without the appropriate appreciation for those kinds of uses of the site. So thank you.
Agreed. Thanks, Steve.
Mr. Chairman, I have some comments too.
Yeah, go ahead, Crystal.
Yeah, I would just want to echo what Steve just said. I think I think I've said this before, but I really like the dashboard concept and feel like it presents the information in a user-friendly fashion. It's just much more kind of understandable. And so really appreciate the presentation. It was great and super excited about the dashboard. So thank you.
Thanks, Crystal. Anyone else? Okay. Hearing none, I'm going to move us now to public comment on this item. So to participate in the meeting, go to trpa.gov. In the calendar, click on Advisory Planning Commission meeting, May 12th, 2021. There you'll find a link to the public webinar hosted on GoToWebinar. If any member of the public wishes to address the Advisory Planning Commission, please use the hand-raising function now, and you will be unmuted by a TRPA staff member.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Carol Black, you're unmuted on my end to make your comment.
Good morning again. I'll be very brief. I actually didn't have any prepared comments. I really would commend the presentation and all of the efforts that are being made in terms of transparency and data availability. Great to hear. I do have just a couple of comments and suggestions, and I may be in touch offline if that's okay. The first is the four-year reevaluation. I get it. It's a very comprehensive program, but the capability of doing interim measurements and midterm program adjustments, I think, is important. And I know that's been addressed certainly in the transportation arena, but just wanted to kind of flag that for future thought. The other is that database that you showed, where you could click among the documents and look at the history, I think is be great. I may be missing something, but I just spent a few minutes here while you were talking, looking at online at the trpa.gov website, and I couldn't find a link to that. Now, I'm not saying it's not there. I just am telling you it's not obvious to the intuitively obvious to the most casual observer, me. So that's just a comment. And I also wanted to just mention a bit about water and air quality, and the recent increases in tourism, and also its climate as well, and the wildfires. Last summer, when I couldn't breathe in Incline and had filters going and was locked in one room with my husband, I was trying to look at outside measurements, and I had a great deal of difficulty finding measurements around the lake. I found some, but I could find them across the lake, but not near me. I'm not sure this is TRPA's responsibility, but to the extent there is data, if there's ways to make it easy to access contemporaneously, it might be just helpful to users. And so that's on the air quality stuff. And also the forest management that Eric was talking about, urban forestry, et cetera, that's obviously critical, along with controlling climate change in terms of these wildfires. It was not fun last summer, as I'm sure you're all aware. And the other is the water quality. I am not disputing any of what's been said about microorganisms and temperatures, et cetera. But I do want to mention, the last time I was on a kayak out of Incline Village was in 2019. I didn't go last summer because there were too many people on the beach with this local pandemic. I have never seen as much trash along the shores, not on the beach. I mean, I didn't look on the beach. I'm talking about in the water, floating along, just going up and down with my kayak along those Incline Village beaches and over towards Hidden Beach, etc. My husband and I don't go that far. We stay relatively close to shore, and the amount of trash floating in the water was stunning. So I don't know that we measure that, but it's just a suggestion of something to consider. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you, Ms. Black, for your comments.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I just wanted to mention, so just in response to the link on the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency's website, you have to sort of scroll down just a little bit, but there's a circle at the bottom that references Lake Tahoe info. And so that would be the link to get over to where the threshold dashboard sits. And I just want to give a plug for our amazing GIS team that, so in response to the question about current air quality conditions, we actually have a map on our website that's GIS, like Geographic Information Systems, .trpa.org. And it shows the 24-hour forecast of smoke in the Lake Tahoe region and really throughout, but it's concentrated in Tahoe. That's a really great map. When there's wildfires in the region, you can see the where they're coming from and then the forecast for where that smoke may go in the next 48 hours. So it's one that was put together a couple of years ago, and I highly encourage folks to use it.
Thanks. I just pulled it up. Looks good. Catherine, any other public comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are no other hands raised to make a comment on this item.
Thank you, Catherine. I'll go ahead and close public comment. And any final thoughts from APC members? Okay. Thank you, Ken, so much for your time on this item.
Yes, thank you. And again, I just wanted to acknowledge and thank again all of our partners in the IP and partners that do their own monitoring that feeds into the threshold evaluation. Again, this is a regional thing that the TRPA coordinates, but it's really a report for the region and for the partnership as a whole. So we really appreciate the partnership. And again, I just wanted to thank TRPA staff. Gene McNamara was the project lead for our threshold evaluation, Dan Segan, and so many of our, science partners and, federal, state, and local partners. So thanks to everyone that contributed on this evaluation.
Great. Yep. Agreed. Thank you, Ken. Have a good rest of the day.
Thank you.
I'm going to move us now to item 7, which is our reports, and I'm going to pass this to John Hester for the Executive Director Report, including the quarterly report that's included in our packet on page 207.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and you took care about half of what I was going to say by telling them that the quarterly report's on page 207. So I'll cover upcoming topics. As you know, the APC is responsible for the Tahoe Living Working Group on Housing. And so some of their work will be presented to you at your next meeting, including the first priority group of housing work on ADUs and conversions of tourist accommodation units to residential units. So look forward to that information presentation. And if not next month, the month after that, we'll be asking for a recommendation. Just depends on where we are on that work. And I know, Mr. Chairman, you could add to that if you'd like, because you're chair of that group, but I think we've been making a lot of good progress and look forward to presenting that to you next month. That's all I have.
Thanks, John. I agree with what you said. Yep, lots of progress being made. Thank you. I'll pass it now to John Marshall for the General Counsel status report.
Thank you, Brendan. We received this week a motion to add a new plaintiff in the Eisenstecken versus TRPA and Verizon lawsuit, which is over a yet to be approved cell tower in South Shore. This new plaintiff would like to join the litigation to sue over lack of accommodation under the ADA and Fair Housing Amendments Act regarding two small cell sites that have already that have been operating and for which he blames his lymphoma, I believe. And so we will be continuing to litigate this case in the Eastern District of California Federal Court. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, John, for the update. Now I'll go over to our APC members for reports. So I'm just going to go down my list here. Why don't I start with Mr. Alling?
Nothing at this point, Mr. Chair. Thanks,
Garth. How about Mr. Booth?
No update for you today. Thank you.
Thanks, Sam. Ms. Chandler?
Nothing to report today. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Drake?
One thing that's sort of on topic, Carol's comment about trash in the lake, it's been on my mind as well. And if anybody's interested, Taha Waterman is an organization and a location on the North Shore in Carnelian Bay. And there is a trash cleanup on the water for people who want to be out on paddleboards, canoes, kayaks, and whatnot this Sunday. I believe it starts at 1 or 2 p.m., but look at tahawaterman.org. It's gotten pretty bad, and it's really hitting me hard, too. I pick up trash every time I'm out on the water, and I could probably spend the next 10 years doing it. But if anybody would like to join in, it's a good way to clean up and fun.
Cool. Thanks, Kevin. Mr. Drew. Perhaps Jason had to drop off. I believe Mr. Gavon is absent today. Am I correct in that?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Hill.
Nothing to report this month. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Kevin. Ms. Jacobson.
Yeah, I have just two things real quick. The first is in terms of our CEDRA office hours, we just opened our front counter for drop-in appointments. So we're fully open to the public now, just a heads up on that. Monday through Thursday, we're closed on Fridays. And then the second thing is just that our board adopted our housing element yesterday at their meeting. And it is now off to HCD for review and certification. So it contains a lot of new policies and programs that really support our housing need. It also contains some that are specific to the Tahoe region. So we're pretty excited about that. That's it for me. Thanks.
Thanks, Crystal. Mr. Letton.
Nothing to report. Thank you, Board Chair.
Thank you, Ben. How about Ms. Ferris? I don't know if you want to, you know, give us a short background on yourself, if you feel that's appropriate, just since this is your first meeting, I'll leave it up to you.
So I don't have anything to report. This isn't really my first meeting. I was a member when I was with Douglas County for about a year and a half as planning manager. With Lee retiring here, Hope Sullivan is now the community development director. I've been promoted to planning manager. So now I am once again sitting with you folks.
Great. So you know us well then. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
How about Mr. Hitchcock?
Nothing to report.
Thanks, John. Ms. Stoller?
Hi, thanks, Mr. Chair. For those of you who attended TIE SC, this is probably a little bit repetitive, but just wanted to make the commission aware that we are moving forward with one of our bigger EIP projects this summer, and that is the construction of phase one of Spooner Front Country. That's a visitor center and amphitheater at the Spooner unit of Lake Tahoe Nevada State Park. That construction is anticipated to start May 17th, will run through the summer, and the contractor is going to be working hard to minimize any visitor impacts. We're anticipating that the unit will be closed to the public for one weekend, I think in late June, but I think that would be kind of the extent of the closure. So anyway, we're excited for that project and to see that come to fruition. That'll be happening this field season, and then hopefully, fingers crossed, the second phase of that project will occur next field season. Thanks, Mr. Chair. That's my report.
Thanks, Ellery. Mr. Teixeira.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I had to step away for a few minutes there. And I don't know if this came up before, but pretty good news today that in Congress, both on the House side and the Senate side, a bill has been introduced to extend the authorization and the lifeblood of the Tahoe Restoration Act through September 30th, 2034. So, you know, we've been concerned that we're several years into the LTRA and took us a long time to get there, and unfortunately not anywhere near the $415 that's been authorized has been expended. So for about a year, the Lake Tahoe Partnership, TRPA, Tahoe Chamber, League to Save Lake Tahoe, been working with members of our delegation to try to get something like this on the table. So it was formally introduced today. And again, it would extend the LTRA, reauthorizes the funding, and extends it through September 30th, 2034. It gives us a better chance to try to spend the entire $415 million. So anyway, that's my report today. Thank you, sir.
That's really good news, Steve. Is there a website we can read more about that, or?
I'm not sure if it's on a website. I do know that Congressman Amadei put out a press release. Okay. I know that Julie Reagan at the agency has it. Senator Cortez Masto also put out a press release. So, I mean, I could also send it to anybody who's interested so you could look at the information, which the bill itself is pretty short. But, you know, what is important is the quotes of our delegation and what we call the Friends of Tahoe, which are people in Congress, particularly in the House side, that don't necessarily represent Tahoe, but are very helpful and very friendly and very supportive of Tahoe's needs. So a good example being Congressman Garamendi of California. That's just one example. But there's some information that could be shared, and it could be shared with the APC if somebody on staff wanted to do that, or I'd be happy to do it.
Yeah, I think that'd be great for members to see it. So See if we can track that down. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. How about Mr. Young?
Hello, everyone. I'm hoping that as the next couple of years unfold, I'll be able to bring a lot of updates to you on our implementation activities, but I don't have a lot for you today other than to say thank you for paying attention earlier. I would like to echo what I heard today about litter and trash. I think all of us who enjoy outdoor recreation are recognizing that it's not only at Lake Tahoe where this phenomenon is getting out of hand. The fishing spot I've been going to for 20 years and never seen the slightest hint of litter. You know, the last 2 years, I have to throw stuff in the back of my truck when I leave there that other people have left. So it's happening everywhere, but it is particularly disturbing up at the lake for some reason. I don't know what the phenomenon is. It's definitely happening. And this is actually not the first time we've had public comment on litter at the lake. And so I don't think it would be a bad idea for us to try and chart out some kind of what are we thinking about this? Is this an issue? Does it need attention? Or is it some sort of a temporary phenomenon, which I doubt that it is, but I think we're going to continue to hear about this issue until there's a formalized way to address it. I don't know that it needs to be a threshold standard, although I think I would be in favor of that. But it clearly, as the population pressure increases everywhere on outdoor recreation, and particularly at the lake, this is going to be a problem that increases, and it would be good to have a plan for it. So thank you for indulging me. Everybody have a great day.
Thanks, Eric. You too. Vice Chair Carr.
Nothing to add today. Thank you.
Thank you. And just a really brief update from me. Yesterday, the El Dorado County Board of Supervisors did vote to adopt a clustering policy into our vacation home rental ordinance. They directed staff to come back with ordinance amendments to include a 500-foot radius around existing VHRs where no other VHRs would be allowed. Existing VHRs will phase out through attrition. If they're inside of clusters, when the policy goes into effect, they will not automatically lose a permit. But as they do not renew or get code case violations and lose permits, if they're inside of cluster boundaries, they will not be allowed to reobtain a permit. So this is partially in response to TRPA's performance review system on neighborhood compatibility, which includes the locational criteria, which are pretty hard to comply with, I think, for local jurisdictions. So it's a big change for us, politically a hot topic, and there was quite a bit of public testimony last night. That's what I was doing. And Steve, that's my thunder. I shared it. Sorry, John. John Hester, I shared my secret. So there you go. And I wanted to say that John Hester put in the comment that TRPA is working with the science community on better messaging about trash, and Clean Tahoe is being hired by the North Shore. So that is really good news, because Clean Tahoe is a huge resource for us on the South Shore. So I'm happy to hear that. That is fantastic. And thank you all for your updates. I'm going to move us now to our final item. Item 8, which is closing public interest comments. Members of the public participating in our virtual meeting via the GoToWebinar app on their computer, smartphone, or tablet should raise their hand now to indicate they wish to speak, and they'll be unmuted by a TRPA staff member. Just a reminder to keep comments as brief and concise as possible. Please note the Advisory Planning Commission is prohibited by law from taking immediate action on or discussing issues raised by the public that are not listed on the agenda. I'll turn this over to you, Catherine, to see if there's any final public comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one more time for members of the public. If you'd like to make a comment at this time, please click on the hand icon to the left-hand side of your control panel. And Mr. Chair, we have no hands raised to make a public comment on this item.
Okay, thank you, Catherine. I believe we can adjourn. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Thank you. All those in favor? Aye.
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 Great. Thank you all. I'm assuming no one's opposed. That motion carries. And I will go ahead and adjourn our APC meeting at 12:08 today.